I just want to say a big thank you to Dr. Timms for coming all the way from South America to be with us. His employing organization said you can't have him for the entire time. You can only have him for just this little short time that we've got him. And we're just grateful for his willingness, number one, to put the burden of travel on himself to come, and to his employing organization for releasing him to minister to us. And I was really been blessed by his ministry here. I know we will be again today. And I just want to express our appreciation for coming and helping us with this symposium and sharing what the Lord has given you. Has been a real blessing to us. So we'll turn right over to you so we won't take from your time.
I would just like to invite you to turn to the second paper, I understand, in our syllabus. Yes, that's right. I was really in doubt whether we should read it or just highlight some ideas. But, yeah? Okay. So why you are not in doubt? Just myself, it seems. Well, I think that we have to combine both of them in a certain sense here. The title is Miniature Symbolization and the Year-Day Principle of Prophetic Interpretation. This might not be such a familiar topic for you, or maybe some of you might have read it before or studied it, but let's go right away to the introduction. A basic hermeneutical component of the historicist school of prophetic interpretation is the so-called year-day principle. Those who advocate this hermeneutical principle argue that the prophetic time periods connected with apocalyptic prophecies of Scripture have to be understood not as literal days, but rather as symbolic days that represent the same number of literal years. So, for instance, the 70 weeks of Daniel 9 are usually interpreted as 490 years, the 1260 days of Revelation 11 and 12 as 1260 years, and the 1290 days of Daniel 12 as 1290 years, and the 1335 days of Daniel 12 as 1335 years, and the 2300 evenings and mornings of Daniel 8:14 as the same number of years. But several critics have blamed the historicist school for applying inconsistently the year-day hermeneutical principle to some specific Bible prophecies and not to other ones. In 1892, Moses Stewart, professor of Andover Theological Seminary in Massachusetts, inquired ironically why historicists did not use their year-day principle to also interpret the 20 years of Genesis 6:3 as 43,920 years. The 40 days and 49 nights of Genesis 7:4 as 40 years. The 400 years of Genesis 15:13 as 144,000 years. The 7 years of plenty and the 7 of famine of Genesis 41 as 2,529 years of each in succession. You know, he's using really a strong irony here. Historicists have generally replied to those criticisms fall short by disregarding the basic hermeneutical distinction between classical prophecies worded in literal language and apocalyptic prophecies portrayed in symbolic language. Uriah Smith argued that in the midst of symbolic prophecy, the time is not literal, but symbolic also, in which a day stands for a year. William Shea has demonstrated that first, the endpoint of each apocalyptic prophecy reaches beyond the immediate historical context of the prophet to a more distant end of time when the ultimate kingdom of God will be set up. And that second, the magnitude of the events involved in each of those prophecies requires the year-day principle to accommodate the accomplishment with the time span provided by the prophecy itself. You remember, if you read his book, Selected Studies on Prophetic Interpretation, that he really argues that if we would take the 2300 evenings and mornings or days as just literal days, it would not pass even the first kingdom. So it needs the whole span of prophetic events or kingdoms there to reach the time of the end. It needs to be really symbolic time and cannot be just considered as literal days or whatever you say, 7 years or 3.5 years in that case. So we have found, as Seventh-day Adventists, internal evidence in the books themselves that require really the use of the year-day principle. But the problem I was struggling with for a while is it seems that we are inconsistent in our application. We apply to some of those and not to other ones. And let's move a little bit further. Yet, it seems that contemporary historicism is lacking convincing answers to the following questions. Why should Numbers 14:34 and Ezekiel 4:5-6 be used as a hermeneutical principle to interpret the time elements of the prophetic prophecies of Daniel and the Revelation? Would not such a use be simply another example of the so-called text-proof approach? Why is the year-day principle applied to the expression a time, two times, and half a time of Daniel 7:25, in which the word time is taken as a synonym of year? And why is the same principle not applied to the equally apocalyptic 1,000 years of Revelation 21-10. You know? And there is symbolism involved also in the millennium. Or do you believe that the chain is a literal one? It's impossible. Satan could not be imprisoned in such a way. It has to be something different. So there is symbolism involved in this apocalyptic scene of the 1,000 years. So why don't you use the year-day principle? And some people say, well, because it's only used when the word day appears. But then we are in trouble with some other time periods, if you say that this is really the criteria. The present article explores briefly the concept of miniature symbolization in 19th century prophetic literature. The concept can provide helpful hermeneutical insights for the process of responding to those questions from a historicist perspective. Only the actual length of the various prophetic time periods are considered without any attempt to settle the starting and the ending points of each period. Let's move ahead there with the slides. Well, I have here a definition of problem. We already read it in the introduction. Then later on, the next one, the purpose. And we will deal specifically with Numbers 14:34, Ezekiel 4:5-6, and then some of the periods of the book of Daniel and the Revelation of John. Okay. Miniature symbolization in the 19th century. In 19th century Protestant literature, some 19th century historicist scholars argued that the year-day principle of prophetic interpretation should be applied only to the time elements of those specific symbolic prophecies whose symbols represent broader entities than the symbols themselves. You know, before we read those statements, let me just explain. According to those expositors, and I did such a research, and in our literature, it's almost unquoted. I haven't found any references to this kind of argument, except for a footnote in Gerard Damstick's dissertation to George Bush. Not George W. Bush, but another George Bush. There. And that's all. The point is, to apply the Ear Day principle, it first of all has to be prophecy. If it's non-prophecy, just the description of a period, you don't use it. So it has to be prophecy. The second point, it has to be symbolic prophecy or apocalyptic prophecy. But basically we would say symbolic. The third one, it's not enough to be just symbolic. It has to be also in miniature, reduced, especially the main entity involved in the prophecy. You might have some other things involved, but it does not make so much sense. The main entity has to be in miniature. So let's see what Frederick Truston said. In 1812, this man applied the principle of symbolic symmetry, as he calls it, to interpret the prophetic time element expressed in miniature in Revelation 11:3-4. He explains that symbolic prophecy is a picture and all the objects being visible at one view are, of course, in miniature. The times must therefore be used in miniature as days for years. A beast, the miniature picture of an empire, could not with any correspondent prophecy be said to live 1260 years. The prophetic times are therefore in miniature, and the idolatrous empire which prevailed for 1260 years is represented by a beast who lived 1260 days. It is on the same principle that the alleged symbolical symmetry, which requires that every word in a symbolic representation be symbolically understood. I found very interesting these arguments, let me just tell you, because sometimes we just inherit the principle and we don't know the rationale behind it. And we say, well, but it does not make so much sense. This is the reason why I like history. History hurts us sometimes, because we would like better to forget some of the negative stuff related to it. But at the same time, you might recover the arguments and the rationale that was behind those, and we are no longer so much bound to them. Let's see what George Bush says. In 1843, this man, who was a professor of Hebrew and Oriental literature at New York City University, elaborated on the concept of miniature symbolization. He defined that concept in the following terms. The scripture presents us with two distinctive classes of predictions, the literal and the symbolic. Where an event or a series of events or a historical character is symbolically announced, we naturally look for the announcement to be made in the plainest, simplest, and most literal terms. No reason can be assigned for designating periods of time in a mystical or figurative diction. But the case is entirely reversed in regard to the symbolical prophecies. The prophets have frequently, under divine prompting, adopted a system of hieroglyphic representation in which a single man represents a community and a wild beast, an extended empire. Consequently, since the mystic exhibition requires that the association chronological periods should be exhibited in miniature also. Later on, or in the same book, he continues, The grand principle, I mean, sorry, it's an article actually, not a book. The grand principle into which the use of employing a day for a year is to be resolved is that of miniature symbolization. As the events are thus economically reduced, the periods are to be reduced in the same relative proportion. What the proportion is, we cannot positively determine without some antecedent information touched the rate or scale of reduction. But the probability is that such scale will be at a rate of, and this is a very interesting statement, a day or minor revolution of the earth around its axis for a year or greater revolution of the earth round the sun. A large extract of Bush's article, Prophetic Designations of Time, from which those quotes came, was reprinted by Joshua V. Himes in the Millerite periodical The Advent Herald and Science of the Times Reporter, we usually know just as Advent Herald, of March 6, 1844. Himes described the article as a triumphant argument in proof of the prophetic, that the prophetic days are symbols of years. And this is the only reference I found in Millerite literature to this kind of argument. T.R. Burks, one of the most comprehensive 19th century expositions of the Year Day principle, is T.R. Burks' First Elements of Sacred Prophecy, 1843. Burks, a fellow of the Trinity College, Cambridge, suggested that God used the symbolical Year Day principle to keep the church in the attitude of continual and lively expectation of her Lord's Day, despite the fact that the long delay of that event was prophetically announced, because it was announced in such a manner that its true length might not be understood till its own close seemed to be drawing near. This paragraph, I think, is very important for us. God could have given the time prophecies in a concrete way. But what would be the reaction if Christ would say to his disciples, well, don't be really confused. My second coming will not take place prior to 2,000 years. Do you believe that they would continue preaching with the same enthusiasm they had? Definitely not. So, God gave something that could be understood, but at the same time, like the parables, he gave the message, but they could not take it by the word, really. Discussing the so-called systematic employment of miniature in hieroglyphical symbolization as related to Numbers 14:34, Burks distinguished between a miniature in type and a miniature in symbol. He argued that a type is a real and a symbol an unreal or ideal representation of the real object. In the type, the spies, who were real persons, represent the whole nature. And the 40 days of their search, a real period, represented the real time of the stay in the wilderness. In the visions of Daniel or Saint John, the ten-horned beast or the sun-clothed women, unreal figures, represent the empire or the church of Christ. And the 1260 days or 42 months, an unreal period grammatically suggested, represented the true period designated of many years. The analogy, therefore, contained in the scripture history is precisely the complete. It supplies us from the lips of the all-wise God himself with a distinct scale by which to interpret every prophetic period which bears the internal marks of a suggested character as a miniature representation of some larger period. In 1847, and we are at the top of page 5, in 1847, E.B. Eliot provided additional helpful insights about the concept of miniature symbolization. Eliot, a vicar of Tuxford and a fellow of Trinity College, Cambridge, stated that the symbolic beast's time of proposing, of prospering, was intended probably to figure out some much longer time as that of an empire symbolized. He argued also that if a day means year in one miniature symbolic vision, it seems reasonable so to construe it in all. While other historicists apply the year-day principle only to those symbolical visions in which the personifying symbol was a person or animal, Eliot believed it should also be applied to other visions in which the same chronological proportion of scale, if I may so say, between the personifying symbol and the nation symbolized is observed, such as in Isaiah 54, Jeremiah 2, Ezekiel 23, and so on, where a person symbolizes Israel and a single human lifetime symbolizes the span of Israel's national history. Eliot states further that even where the personifying symbol is not a person or animal, it may yet have its own scale of time, appropriate to the mutations figuratively described of it in the picture or poem. And so, if so, this is observed and applied. For example, in personifications under the figure of a flower or a long-leaved tree in their stage of growth and decline, even in a symbolizations by wholly inanimate objects, the same observance of the fit scale of time may be often seen. And in Horace's symbolization of the Roman nature and its civil wars, under the figure of a storm-tossed ship returned into port, a navy's reference, where the briefer storm represents a longer civil commotion or commotions. The above mentioned definitions of the concept of miniature symbolization provide some basic guidelines for studying the passage of scripture to which historicists apply the year-day principle. The following section considers briefly how this concept can be identified in those passages. You know, you might probably want to read those definitions again, because it's not always easy to grasp it just at once. You have probably to analyze them and study them. But I hope that the basic idea is clear to you. Well, if you could turn off the light again. There I have just the definitions of Bush, Burks, Eliot. And now we have a kind of illustration. There you have like a camera. It's an imperfect one. It would not really help so much, but at least gives the idea. You have here a microcosmic representation of an animal, a lion in this case here. And if you really, we could use another word in our days, like the zoom. If you zoom it down or up. So here you have the microcosmic, the smaller representation, and there you have the larger. When this happens really in a prophecy, where you cannot interpret literally the person, the animal involved, but it represents a larger corporative entity or a group of people, a nation, an empire, or a power, then the time involved in such prophecy has also to be enlarged in its interpretation. It would be like if you zoom it down, everything is small. Then you zoom it up, everything should be larger. So this would be the basic principle they suggest. Well, let's follow more the what's there. Otherwise, it would be too tiring to go just through the reading, and you can read it later on if you are interested in the topic. As I mentioned at the beginning, many people challenge the use of numbers and Ezekiel, saying, but how can you use non-apocalyptic literature to interpret apocalyptic literature? You are using definitely the year day principle, the text proof approach in your use of the year day principle. But I would like to suggest that I found out through this kind of study that really it cannot be regarded just as a text proof approach. Perhaps even the real interpretation. Because in the case of numbers, and you have the passage there, according to the number of days in which you spy out the land, 40 days for every day a year, you should bear your iniquity, 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. What is really the main entity involved in this prophecy? You have there 12 spies, and they represented just themselves? No. They represented 12 tribes, a larger entity. In this case, you don't have apocalyptic literature, but you have the same kind of phenomena there. You will see that the 40 days consequently represent what? 40 years. Let's move to the next one. You have Ezekiel there. This is a very interesting passage, in my opinion. You have Ezekiel 4, 5, and 6. For I assign to you a number of days, 390 days, equal to the number of years of their punishment. So long shall you bear the punishment of the house of Israel. And when you have completed this, you shall lie down a second time, but on your right side, and bear the punishment of the house of Judah, 40 days. I assign you a day for each year. So, if you study the context, you have a lot of miniature representations there. We didn't put all the text there, or the whole passage. But he was supposed, the prophet, to build a small model there of Jerusalem, and to put there the armies around it, and some other things. You remember the passage there. So you have a lot of miniaturization there. But the point really is not the detail, is not related to the details, but to the main entity. Who was really the main entity involved in this case? The prophet himself. And he represented first the kingdom of Israel, and then later on the kingdom of Judah. And God asked him, you better lay down now on your left side for 390 days. And this represents, I cannot imagine how he was able to survive such a long period of time there, but at least that is the case. And then that would represent what? The number of years. Later on, he should lay down on his right side for 40 days. And those 40 days would represent 40 years. You see that the principle of miniaturization is involved in that kind of prophecy also. So although these passages are not, this is the main point I would like to make, are not taken from the book of Daniel, and the revelation of John, but they have the same kind of principle involved basically in those books. Let's move forward. Now we have Daniel 7:25, and there it stated, "He shall speak words against the Most High," and so on, and then comes to the point that, "And they shall be given into his hand, the saints, for a time, two times, and half a time." So the whole chapter, you have already many entities represented in miniature. Animals representing kingdoms. And you know very, very well this kind of art classical interpretation. But the main entity involved or related to the time period is what? The little horn. It's interesting that the little horn for us remains as a little horn up to today. We do not realize that it grew really significantly. It should be extremely large horn, or big, or whatever. But we keep on saying that it's a little horn. So this little horn represents a larger entity, as the Protestant tradition, and we also understand is, and there is no other better way to understand it, as the papacy. So the time that we already put as 1260 days represent the same number of years. Okay, Daniel 8:14, "And he said to him, for 2300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state." I am using basically the Revised Standard Version, because this is the right translation, 2300 evenings and mornings, and not just days directly, that we, of course, have no doubt that they represent days. But then you have, again, animals representing kingdoms, and then the main entity, the little horn, as the papacy, and definitely the 2300 days as 2300 years. The same kind of reality as before. I will not go into the reading of this passage, but Daniel 4:24 to 27 is a very interesting passage. In the same chapter, you have the 70 years of Jeremiah, referred to in the prayer, of Daniel's prayer there. And the question that comes is, why do you apply to one period of time and not to the other one? And some people say, well, because the first one is a historical description just. No, it's a prophecy. Jeremiah did not prophesy that for 70 years would last the captivity, the exile. It's a prophecy. But the point is not a symbolic prophecy, and is not even in miniature. So, but, and what would we say in regard to Daniel 9:24 to 27? Is there the main entity in miniature? It's not described there, as far as I understand at least. Maybe you can find, and probably you are able to see things that I am unable to see. But anyway, although there is not a miniature reference to the main entity explicitly exposed in this passage, what really means Daniel 4:24 to 27? Yeah, it's an explanatory appendix to Daniel 8:14. And almost all historicists used to say that the key element in understanding these periods is the relationship between Daniel 9 and 8. It provided the answer as we studied the lesson, the Sabbath school lesson recently. I think last week even. So that's an explanatory appendix to Daniel 8:14. Therefore, I believe that it has to share the same nature as of the chapter to which it's related, or the context, by which I mean Daniel 8. So the time, 70 weeks or 490 days, representing the same number of years. This is not a big deal because, I don't know, there are some people that are more expert in biblical studies, especially on the book of Daniel. But the vast majority of the interpreters, they say that this has to be understood as 490 years. But they use the argument that weeks represent years. Or you, once the word weeks appears, so you have to use it as a symbol of years, because otherwise you cannot make it fulfill with Christ there. So why don't you use also to the other time periods correlated with the same one? Okay? The next one. Now we go to Daniel 12. And there you find in verse 7 another reference to a time, two times, and half a time. Some people say, well, but Daniel 12 is just a historical description. So you cannot use those the periods related to that chapter as prophetical ones. You have to, being understood as days, years. But William Shea has demonstrated in his commentary on the book of Daniel very convincingly that the time periods in the book of Daniel always appear not within the main body of the prophecy, but later on as calibrating appendixes to the prophecy. He used a kind of terminology. In other words, after the animals are described, the animals, the little horn, and also you have later on the kings of chapter 11, then in the explanatory section appears the time element related to those kind of kingdoms or animals or whatever you want. So Daniel 12 is not an exception, is an explanatory explanation to what happened in Daniel 10 and 11. So this time period, in this case, you don't have really the main entity referred here. You are just the time period is mentioned. So I believe that once a prophetic time period is already defined within the book, you don't need to have again the same kind of reality to be sure that it should continue to be understood in this way. So this, the main entity is already defined in Daniel 7:25. So it should be continued to be understood in the same way as days representing years. And then we come to the crucial ones, Daniel 12, 11 and 12. And there you have the reference to the 1,290 days first, and then to 1,335 days. And for the same reason I mentioned before, some people say, well, this is in a historical section. Then there is no reason for us to understand them through the year day principle. But it's interesting in this case that those time periods are not given at the end of the book just in isolation. There you have a reference, a clear reference to what? The abomination that makes desolation, or depending on the translation you have. And this is clearly mentioned in Daniel 8:13 in relationship to the work of what? The little horn. So although the little horn does not appear there, but it work is mentioned clearly there, the abomination that makes or causes desolation. And it's interesting that this same abomination that makes desolate is refer to in Daniel 11:31, the main body of that prophecy. And it has its antecedent in 8:13. I don't know if I made me clear. So there is a link, a connection between not only, I mean, Daniel 11, but also with even Daniel 8:13. Besides the fact that we regard the kings, the king of the north and the king of the south, not only as a literal person, but really as a larger power. So the same time period, see, of the 1290 days and 1290 represent 1290 years and 1335 days as 1335 years. So I believe that our interpretation, our historicist interpretation of these passages is more consistent than we sometimes realize. Okay. So, the exceptions of the book, where no miniature symbolization is clearly referred in the context, or even in, there is no connection to it, you have the seven times of Daniel 4, where, of course, there are symbols involved. You have the tree and so on, but does not represent something larger. You understand the point? So, William Miller, when he used this, he was not fully aware of this, or not even knew about this principle. And it's interesting that the Jehovah's Witnesses use this as a key time element for them, and our pioneers didn't use it. And I am really impressed why they didn't use it, since William Miller used to use it, in other words. You have the same, as I already mentioned, the 70 years. It's a prophecy, but not in symbolic terms and not in miniature. Now we go to Revelation, and this is an area a little bit controversial. Since I published this article, I would like to see some reactions, but they didn't come, didn't show. Only two people who read the article prior to the publication said, no, published as it is written. But you know, we might always learn from it, because we can go into some kind of slippery areas. If we use this principle to the book of Revelation, it might help us. But I think that further study should really, because this is in a certain kind of pioneer work, trying to call the attention to it, to the possibility. You know, you have Revelation 2:10. Do not fear that you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested. And for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. So the main entity. Now we are in a point where it depends on the school of interpretation we belong to. If we use the historicist approach, it makes sense. If we don't use it, it does not make sense. So, if the main entity, the Church of Smyrna, is regarded not only as a local church, but as a reference to the Christian church around this period, you might probably come up with some other one, but of a larger period of, I mean, a larger period of time of the main Christian, the basic Christian church as a whole. In other words, a local congregation referring to the whole church or the church as a whole, then it makes sense. And those 10 days would represent 10 years. Then you have a reference to 5 months. In 5 months, I will just to highlight it. You have here the main entity, the fifth trumpet. If you interpret the fifth trumpet as the Christian church from 1299 to 1449, then the 5 months could be understood as 150 years. But here we come to one that might be challenged by some of you. You have a reference here to a very interesting point here. So the four angels were released, who had been held ready for the hour, the day, and the month, and the year to kill a third of mankind. Most of the interpreters, as that I know of at least, and even many Adventists say, well, this is not a reference to a time span, but really to a moment in time, because the emphasis is in an hour, a day, a month, and a year. And this is a crucial passage. I think that this one really brings down the argument that you can use the year-day principle only when the word day appears, and not the word year. If this is the case, my question is, would you take as a reference the word day appearing there and using the year-day principle? Or would you use the word year and saying you cannot apply the year-day principle because the word year appears there? So I think that we run in trouble with this. Unless you understand this as a emphatical statement just to say that this is a special moment in time. But if you follow the traditional Adventist, and I mean Millerite understanding of this period as a reference to the sixth trumpet, and then you have the Christian church from a larger period, and then you come to the hour, the day, and the month, and the year as a reference to 391 years and 15 days. You know, this is something that should be studied further, somewhat. But many good people say that this is just a moment in time and not a time period. What really impresses is that one of the Millerites, with his calculation, based on the year-day principle, came to the conclusion, now I am in doubt if it was Charles Fitch. Yes, he could really foretell exactly when it would happen. And it actually happened in the day that was expected. And that gave really a strong power to the Millerite movement, because they published it in advance, saying, well, then the Ottoman Empire would fall, and so on. And it happened to be really as predicted. Then you have a reference to the 42 months and 1,260 days. And some other people also regard this kind of time periods as synonymous. A time, two times, and half a time, the 42 months, and also the 1260 days. The main entity in this case, two witnesses. If we understand the two witnesses as some of the evangelical and Catholic expositors saying, well, those can be the prophets like Elijah, I think, and Moses, well, then it does not make sense. But if you regard this from the broader prophetic testimony of the Old Testament and the New Testament there, then the 40 months and this other period also might represent 1260 years. You have there a reference to 3 days and a half again, and the principle would be the same. If you regard those two witnesses as a broader prophetic testimony of the Old and New Testament, it can be understood in the same way as in other cases. In Revelation 12, 6 and 14, you have the reference to 1,260 days again. And the main entity in this case is the woman in the wilderness. If the woman represents just a woman or a person, then it does not make sense. But if we understand this as God's faithful church or God's faithful remnant church, a larger entity, then again you have the 1260 days standing for 1260 years. And here you have an allusion in this passage, Revelation 13:5. To the 42 months, the same time period, as we understand. The main entity, a beast, again. And this beast, standing for Papal Rome. Therefore, the time period described as 42 months, standing for the 1260 years. Without miniature symbolization, as I mentioned, Revelation 20:1-10, you have the reference to the 1,000 years, you have symbolism involved, but not in miniature. So we would not understand the 1,000 years as 360,000 years. You know, we just understand it, and some interpreters of those days suggested it. But I think not. It does not make sense based on the principle we just exposed. And of course, there might be a discussion about half an hour. I just put a question mark there, because this is another struggle. Some people understand this as a week, but at the same time, it appears after 1844. And there is a lot of discussion that I would not like to go into this, because some people say, well, the year day principle just works up to 1844 and should not be used later on. If you use this kind of argument, then it's already out. If you say no, just when the miniature symbolization is being used, then it can be used and it would work. But this is a complete different discussion. Okay? Now let's come to some final points of miniature symbolization. First, of some of my conclusions, the miniature symbolization can involve entities such as symbols in Ezekiel 4 and types, as in Numbers 13 and 14. The presence of miniature symbolization requires that the main entity or entities involved represent larger corporative powers. The tangential allusions to miniature symbols do not replace the lack of miniature characteristics in the main entity or entities, as I just mentioned in regard to the millennium. You have the chain, but Satan remains a Satan. A prophetic time period is of a symbolic nature and has to be interpreted from a year-day perspective. A prophetic time period, previously defined as of a symbolic nature, does not lose... This is the sign of the end. Does not lose its symbolic nature when referred to it not so clearly miniature symbolic context. You remember? I have in mind in this statement exactly the time, two times and half a time that was already defined in Daniel 7. And then later on it appears again in Daniel 12:7. So although the setting there is no longer as clear as the previous one, it does not lose its characteristic just because it's referred over again. Okay? And then the final conclusions. The use of Numbers 14:34 and Ezekiel 4:5-6 to interpret the miniature symbolic time periods of the book of Daniel and the revelation of John cannot be considered a text-proof approach, for they share the very same miniature symbolic nature. Prophetic time periods zoomed down into a symbolic microcosmic scale can be better understood by zooming them up into their macrocosmic fulfillment by taking the rotation of the earth a day as a symbol of the translation of the earth and year. In this point here, I am referring to one of those authors we quoted first in this last part here. Yes, exactly. And then, the last and most important part of our presentation, the end. Thank you so much. And if you have some questions, probably tomorrow morning we can try to address some of those.
American Cassette Ministries is pleased to provide you with this presentation from the First Michigan Conference Bible Prophecy Symposium presented at their ministerial retreat at Camp Osabo, August 6 through 9, 2006. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International Copyright 2006, American Cassette Ministries. For the largest selection of authentic, genuine Adventist preaching available, visit our secure website at www.americancassette.org. Our latest catalog is online, plus thousands of other selections to choose from. We accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover credit cards. You will find there is no compromise here at ACM. We've been maintaining the integrity of the Three Angels' messages since 1975. We request your prayers and continued tax-deductible financial support for this 501c3 nonprofit ministry so that we can continue helping prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.